Thank you, Father, for bringing us here this evening. Thank you so much for giving us the courage and the willingness to go through this work. Please open our hearts and open our minds. Please carry this message, speak through me, help this to land on open hearts. Help others to have a real experience with what we talk about tonight. Thank you so much for bringing us together. Shower your grace upon us while we're here and thereafter. In your name I pray, amen. Okay, so our set-aside prayer is still the same. It is, God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Please help me to see the truth about what happens to me after I take a drink or a drug or whatever our affliction may be. Help me to recognize this phenomenon of craving that we've been talking about. This set-aside prayer you guys should be utilizing every time you sit down to read, transcribe, do your questions. So take a minute prior to engaging in the work to say the set-aside prayer and ask God to enable you to set aside everything you think you know. It's very important, especially if we've been through the work before. So this week we're going to be talking about the second half of Bill's story. Last week when the meeting was over, I was afraid I may have overshared. I want you guys to understand the importance of vulnerability. I would encourage you to be able to do that with at least one other person in your life, preferably a sponsor or step guide as you go through this work. I would also encourage you to dig very deeply into your personal experience with the words in this book. How do you relate? What does it mean to you? And the most important question, do I believe? We transcribe, do I believe, over and over and over again. So it's very important to revisit that all the time. Do I truly believe this? And in the beginning, we talked about, did I feel like that? Did I think like that? And do I believe this program will work for me? So it's a very important question to ask and to be honest with yourself and to dig deep. I know we are doing this format, the work prior to me going over the content. And if any of you feel that after you listen to me go over the content that you would like to revisit the questions, revisit the work, that's why we have offered another man, his name is Vinny, to do a question and answer session on Mondays. So if any of you feel that you want to go over something again after you listen to me speak, feel free to reach out to Vinny. He'd be more than willing and more than happy to go over it with you again, answer any questions you may have. If you miss a homework group, it might be a good idea to reach out to Vinny and utilize his services. He offered it to me, and I think it's a great idea. So where we stopped last week, we basically talked about Bill Wilson's demise, and we talked about my demise. And hopefully you all were encouraged to look at your own and what brought us here. Tonight we're going to talk about Bill's recovery. And though we are looking at the first part of the first step and the physical craving, you will recognize as we go through parts of Bill's story and there is a solution that we're talking about much more. We're talking about recovery, future steps, implementing the power of God in our lives. So take note to that. I'll try and touch on some of those things tonight. Another reason why I like to have you guys go through the homework first is when I touch on this, margins that we transcribed, the asterisks, you all have already written that in your book. So as we're going through this, you have your book out and you can kind of read with me. So at the top of page 9, we wrote page 9 through 16. In the second half of Bill's story, I will look at my willingness by understanding anything I find that I haven't been willing to do in the past that Bill did to recover. After the 8th step, I can look back at this section for what I can relate to. Now we're going to find a lot of areas that we say, but I'm willing to do anything. And that's true. And that's why we're here. But we also want to reflect on the things in our past that we haven't been willing to do. And that's the things that we underline from page 9 through page 16. So I'll pick up where we left off last night, or excuse me, last week. So this is at the bottom of page 8. It says, my musing was interrupted by the telephone. The cheery voice of an old school friend asked if he might come over. He was sober. It was years since I could remember his coming to New York in that condition. I was amazed. Rumor had it that he had been committed for alcoholic insanity. So Ebby Thatcher had gone on a debacle at his parents' vacation home where he began to shoot squirrels with shotguns, drunk, got arrested, and was looking at doing prison time. Ebby Thatcher was a friend of Bill Wilson's, a longtime old friend, a drinking buddy. When Ebby Thatcher went to court, a couple of members of the Oxford Group, which was an Orthodox Christian recovery group, asked the judge if they could take him and basically sponsor him. So the rumor that Bill had heard was that Ebby had been put away for alcoholic insanity. That was the last he heard. So I want you all to imagine one of your craziest drinking buddies that shows up at your house that you thought was locked up. And he's sober.
Do you want to listen to this guy on his talk?
And how that would be.
AA. It's not bad.
I want you to think of how that would be, how you would be looking at this person who just knocked on your door. Your old buddy, your old drug buddy, your old drinking buddy, your old partying buddy, who you thought went away, who's now sober. I wondered how he had escaped. Of course he would have dinner. And then I could drink openly with him, unmindful of his welfare. I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. There was that time we had chartered an airplane to complete a jag. His coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. The very thing, an oasis, drinkers are like that. So we're sitting there, we're hopeless, we can't stop drinking. We feel like we're going to die. Our old buddy shows up, and now we're no longer alone. Misery loves company. And Bill Wilson just found his company, and he walked into his kitchen. The door opened, and he stood there, fresh-skinned and glowing. There was something about his eyes. He was inexplicably different. What had happened? I pushed a drink across the table. He refused it. Disappointed but curious, I wondered what had gotten to this fellow. He wasn't himself. So imagine your buddy or your girlfriend turning down the one thing that you guys did together for years and years and years. How you would be looking at them. Come on, what's all this about? I queried. He looked straight at me, simply, but smilingly he said, I've got religion. I underlined, I've got religion, because in the past, in my life, I didn't instill it on my children. I was always carrying around prejudice. I felt condemned. I never felt good enough. I was such a sinner. So that was one of the things that I was unwilling to explore in my past. I was aghast. So that was it. Last summer, an alcoholic crackpot. Now I suspected a little cracked up about religion. Now remember, all of us are carrying around this prejudice about religion and the rules and the condemnation and the fact that we're not good enough and God can't love us. And if you were like me, you wouldn't want to be religious either. But he had this starry-eyed look. Yes, the old boy was on fire, all right. But bless his heart, let him rant. Besides, my gym would last longer than his preaching. So now it really doesn't matter what you tell me and what you've got. Though I visibly see a difference in you, you're telling me you're sober. All that's going through my mind is, well, there's just more for me then. And I'm just going to sit here and listen to your madness, ask you to leave, and continue to get loaded. Because really, you're not my friend anymore. I don't even know who you are. But he did no ranting. In a matter of fact way, he told how two men had appeared in court. Those were the men from the Oxford group, persuading the judge to suspend his commitment. They had told of a simple religious idea and a practical program of action. That was 2 months ago. And the result was self-evident. It worked. Now, the Oxford group had four absolutes. Absolute honesty, absolute purity, absolute unselfishness, and absolute love. Those are the principles underlying Alcoholics Anonymous. The first 100 deemed those to be too harsh. Then they created the six precepts, which turned into the 12 steps. But Evie Thatcher is sitting in Bill's kitchen, a member of the Oxford group, sober, real alcoholic, practicing religion, and doing his utmost to practice absolute honesty, absolute purity, absolute love, and absolute unselfishness. There are very good virtues to pray for, by the way. It's a very simple prayer. It's a very easy prayer. Virtues are things that we strive for, we walk towards. We ask God's help. We don't have expectation, we just ask God's help. They had told him a simple religious idea and a practical program of action. That was 2 months ago, and the result was self-evident. It worked. So Evie had 2 months sober. He came to pass his experience along to me, if I cared to have it. I was shocked, but interested. Certainly I was interested. I had to be, for I was hopeless. So think about the level of desperation that brought you through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. The very first time, and how desperate you were, and how much prejudice you may have been carrying around, and how the last thing you wanted to talk about was religion or God or a power greater than yourself, but you wanted help. That's where Bill Wilson sits right here. That's where we all walk through the doors. So he says he was interested because he was hopeless. He talked for hours. Childhood memories rose before me. I could almost hear the sound of the preacher's voice as I sat on still Sundays way over there on the hillside. There was that proffered temperance. Pledge I never signed. I'll just say pledge, uncertainty, abstinence from alcohol. My grandfather's good-natured contempt of some church folk and their doings, his insistence that the spheres really had their music, but his denial of the preacher's right to tell him how he must listen, his fearlessness as he spoke of these things just before he died. These recollections welled up from the past. They made me swallow hard. So Bill Wilson's grandfather was a believer, but he wasn't religious. And he drew the line where the preacher was telling him how he had to live. And what I truly love about that is my experience with Alcoholics Anonymous. I've always been a believer. It was instilled in me at a very, very young age by my grandmother. I've never practiced. I've always prayed. But this personal relationship with God, this level of communication that I have today, has been created through this program and this process. And today, I can consider myself a Christian, but not religious. I don't need a preacher to tell me how I need to live. I study the Word of God the same way I study the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. What does it mean to me? What is my experience with that? I don't take it literally. I know that I am a flawed human being and that I always will be. I also know that I am not condemned. And the more I do this, I get convicted, which is very different. It's just my spirit telling me, let's not stay here. And it's a peaceful place. Because now I can be aware and acknowledge that I have a desire to walk towards these virtues without fear of failure, because I'm going to fail. So that wartime day in old Winchester Cathedral came back again. I had always believed in a power greater than myself. I had often pondered these things. I was not an atheist. Few people really are. Because if you're an atheist, that means blind faith in the strange proposition that the universe originated in a cipher and aimlessly rushes nowhere. My intellectual heroes, the chemists, the astronomers, even the evolutionists, suggested vast laws and forces at work. Despite contrary indications, I had little doubt that a mighty purpose and rhythm underlie all. I underline that there have been many times in my life where logic and reason has taken over. My intellect has told me that it cannot be possible that there is an all-powerful, all-loving creator. You can't prove it to me and it doesn't make sense. How could there be so much of a precise, immutable law and no intelligence? I simply had to believe in the spirit of the universe, who knew neither time nor limitation, but that was as far as I had gone. So I remember Bill seeing so much death and war and evil in the world, the depression, poverty, lives ruined, alcoholism. He's not an atheist. He's believing in some sort of power, which I hear a lot in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Some sort of power. I believe in this or this or this. But don't talk to me about a personal God, because that doesn't make any sense. With ministers in the world's religions, I parted right there. When they talked of God personal to me, who was love, superhuman, strength, and direction, I became irritated and my mind snapped shut against such a theory. So contemplate the times in your life when we go from, yes, I believe in this power, something, nature, the ocean, whatever it may be, to this God is personal to you. This God loves you. This God knows you, created you, and cares about you. And I want you to recognize how your mind snaps shut, how there is a level of that can't be true. And as we walk into our second step, we'll begin to touch on that and why that is, and we'll have to dig really deep to understand the level of our prejudice and how much we really want to think honestly and how deep we really want to dig down. I can tell you from experience that God loves you. God loves me and is personal to each and every one of us. Changed my life. To Christ, I conceded the certainty of a great man, not too closely followed by those who claimed him. His moral teaching most excellent. For myself, I had adopted those parts which seemed convenient and not too difficult. The rest I disregarded. So now I want to take that paragraph and I want each and every one of you to apply it to your program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We see this program, we see this process, we see the change, we hear the testimony, we believe it. To Christ I conceded the certainty of a great man. AA is just this great, wonderful thing. The moral teaching in AA most excellent. Now we ask ourselves the question, have I adopted only the parts that seem convenient to me and not too difficult? And disregarded the rest. Have I done a fearless and thorough moral inventory? Have I truly confessed everything to God and to myself and to another human being? Do I have amends that I am not willing to make or making excuses why I cannot do them? Am I afraid to profess the way that God has changed my life? Am I worried about somebody getting their feelings hurt when I am talking to them about the power of this program? Am I only doing what's convenient in Alcoholics Anonymous and not too difficult? It's a very deep question. It's a very strong question. Am I going to multiple workshops to just go? Am I here to have a real new experience? Am I truly willing to get cracked open to feel some real pain? Am I willing to look at that inner child that is so hurt? Not that that causes me to drink, but that definitely is the underlying force in my spiritual malady, which ultimately does lead me to look for comfort and ease through substances. So just something to really contemplate. Top paragraph, page 11. You guys can refer to it all the time. Am I taking the parts that seem convenient? Am I really willing to do what's difficult? The wars which have been fought, the burnings and trickery, that religious dispute had facilitated made me sick. I honestly doubted whether, on balance, the religions of mankind had done any good. And I want you guys to truly contemplate. And again, yes, we are in the first step. Yes, we are talking about the physical craving for the next few weeks. But tonight, we haven't really mentioned anything about the physical craving. So we might as well dive into what we're reading, right? Contemplate the fact that man created religion. God did not create religion. Our prejudice against religion, our prejudice, like when Bill said, God personal to me, my mind snapped shut, is because of religion created by man. The condemnation, the wars, the domination, the superiority, the self-righteousness. None of that is of God. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous is so beautiful, that we can get to create our own personal relationship with a power greater than ourselves and talk to him and rely on him and understand him our own way. And that's what I want you guys to walk towards, because we got to open our minds to it. Because that's where the healing really comes from. That's the solution. And Bill's telling us right here, like, look, how can this be real? you're saying you're religious, but what about all the religious wars and all the liars and the baloney that's going on that I've witnessed? So contemplate that. Judging from what I had seen in Europe, and since the power of God in human affairs was negligible, the brotherhood of man was a grim jest. If there was a devil, he seemed the boss universal, and he certainly had me. So here's another thing to contemplate. Bill says the devil is boss universal before he's even willing to believe in a God personal to himself. So let's think about that. How bad are we? How much do we condemn ourselves that we're willing to believe in all of this evil and all of these things we deserve and how we're not good enough, but we're not willing to walk through that with courage, get to the other side of the fire and see that there is a God and see that there is a God personal to us that cares about us. Something else to contemplate. But my friend sat before me and he made a point blank declaration that God had done for him what he could not do for himself. I haven't walked out to that garage and hit that bong in a year and 2 months. Miracle. Miracle. I haven't had a drink in a year and 2 months. Miracle. Before I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in 2018, every day, like I told you guys last week, from the time I was 11 years old till 2018, I was born in 75.
Yeah.
So I think I was about 43 or so when I came in to Alcoholics Anonymous. Over 30 years. Miracle. I will sit here and declare to each and every one of you tonight that God is doing for me what I cannot do for myself. I will also remind you that God will not do for me what I can do for myself. So I go back up to the top paragraph and I ask myself, am I taking all the parts of this program that seem convenient, which I have done in the past, which led me to relapse? There is a course of action here that is required on my part. Without that, I could not testify to each and every one of you that God has done for me what I cannot do for myself. That wouldn't be fair. His human will had failed. Doctors had pronounced him incurable. Society was about to lock him up. Like myself, he had admitted complete defeat. I underlined admitted complete defeat. There has been, until this last year, I have never admitted complete defeat. I didn't know the nature of my spiritual malady. I couldn't see it. And I wasn't going to be a failure. And defeat was weakness. But I said it over and over, oh yeah, I'm powerless. Then he had in effect been raised from the dead, suddenly taken from the scrap heap to a level of life better than the best he had ever known. Had this power originated in him? Obviously it had not. There had been no more power in him than there was in me at that minute. And that was none at all. Very powerful, powerful statement. So we recognize these people. Maybe we go to some online BBA meetings, or maybe we have a home group and we see these people and we are attracted to them and we are engaged with the words that are coming out of their mouth and we want what they have. And it's inspiring us to pursue deeper recovery. Please understand that that person in front of you has no more power in them than you have in you. Their power is coming from God. And they have admitted complete defeat. And they have recognized that they don't have any power. And that is a powerful message that we can carry to others as we take them through this work. Just like me sitting here tonight, there is no more power in me than there is in you. That floored me. It began to look as though religious people were right after all. Here was something at work, the human heart, which had done the impossible. My ideas about miracles were drastically revised right then. Never mind the musty past. Here sat a miracle directly across the kitchen table. He shouted great tidings. So Bill's slowly starting to turn. He's slowly starting to see this. I saw that my friend was much more than inwardly reorganized. He was on a different footing. His roots grasped new soil. I underlined his roots grasped new soil because I've never been willing to have this paradigm shift in my life. This change of being, this change of attitude, this change of thinking, this destruction of self, to allow this power, to acknowledge that I have none, and that my reliance on God is where I'm going to get all my power. Bill says, I saw that my friends was much more than inwardly reorganized. So we go through these steps. We take an inventory. We share it with somebody else. We become inwardly reorganized. Okay? That in and of itself is not enough for us to remain sober. That in and of itself is a form of self-knowledge. Although I get to see truth, I get to find out who I'm not. As I move through the steps and I go through 6 and 7 and I give it to God and I'm willing and I see the objectionable things in my life and I go out and I make amends that I could not do without this power. And I practice a 10 and 11 each and every day. I pray, I meditate. I'm carrying someone else through this work. I'm walking them towards this power. Now my roots are beginning to grasp a new soil. Now I'm beginning to live this new life. See, the first half of these steps is inward. And I'm experiencing and acknowledging the presence of God. And the second half is outward. And I'm practicing the presence of God. That's my roots grasping new soil. Recognizing that I don't have the power to do that on my own. And ultimately, I begin to get this desire to do that. And it's proof to me that God is personal to me because he's changing me from the inside out. So I become more than just inwardly reorganized. I allow God to pick me up and put me in new ground and to feed me with the water of the Spirit. And to allow me to grow and to allow him to maintain me through seeking him and asking for guidance and asking for direction and holding myself accountable and becoming aware of virtues that I want to walk towards. See, these are all things Bill's recognizing here in this short meeting with Abby Thatcher. Excuse me. Despite the living example of my friend, there remained in me the vestiges of my old prejudice. The word God still aroused a certain antipathy, distaste. When the thought was expressed that there might be a God personal to me, the feeling was intensified. I didn't like the idea. I could go for such conceptions as creative intelligence, universal mind or spirit of nature, but I resisted the thought of a czar of the heavens, however loving his way might be. I have since talked with scores of men who felt the same way. And our asterisk says, Bill didn't like the concept of God in the human form and him being an absolute ruler of the universe, but could accept a formless spiritual force as his God. So being willing to believe is enough. It is the beginning. And if that's where we are today, then that is plenty. And if we're talking with another man or a woman going through this work and the universal mind or spirit of the nature or creative intelligence is something easier for them to grasp, then God bless them. And we build on it and we encourage them to continue to walk forward. And we continue to share with them how God has changed our life. So Bill's sitting there seeing this change. He's continuing to fight it. He's proving to Abby that it can't be personal to you. This can't be real. Look at all this pain and suffering in the world. If there is a devil, he's the boss universal. Abby gets frustrated because he's trying to share with him what has worked for him. And he says, you know what? My friend suggested what then seemed a novel idea. Because at the time, there was no Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. There was no program of AA. There was no 12 steps. So at the time, Bill thought it was a novel idea, but it actually changed the whole concept. And it opened up the door to any type of sufferer that wanted to walk in here. Bill says, or Abby tells him, why don't you choose your own conception of God? So wait a minute. So you mean I don't have to go to church? I don't have to be religious? I don't have to go to confession? I don't have to do Hail Marys or go to a father or talk to my pastor once a week? I don't have to feel condemned? You mean like I can write down on paper what God means to me and that's the God I can pray to? Yes. Yes. And he loves you. And he loves you. Choose your own conception. If you're struggling with God, we'll talk about why when we get to our second step. But that doesn't matter right now. Choose your own conception. What works for you? You hear him say in the rooms of Alcoholic, I found a God I could do business with. Okay. Later on, I'll tell you God of my own understanding turns into God my way, though. So I have to be very cautious, okay, because I'm a selfish, self-centered person who has to be in control. But the God of our own understanding, my own conception of God, is the beginning. And if that's where you're at, then that's where you're at. That statement hit me hard. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow I had lived and shivered many years. I stood in the sunlight at last. So as soon as Abby told him, choose a God of your own conception. You know what, Bill? I'm tired of listening to all the reasons why you're telling me that religion doesn't work and God doesn't work. And he's not personal to you. Choose your own conception. I'm sober. I'm looking at you. I'm proof. Believe me. Bill says, wow. I can work with that. I stood in the sunlight at last. So it says here, this is Bill's second step. His first step was when he said he admitted defeat. He was in that bitter morass of self-pity. He was surrounded by quicksand, which we talked about last week, and I shared mine with you. So his second step, after Abby tells him, choose a God of your own conception. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make a beginning. That's all we need. Something bigger than ourselves. And when I honestly recognize a power greater than myself, I'm admitting that I do not have the power. If I'm walking around thinking that I have the power, then I'm probably not even willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Because I don't know about you guys, but I've carried around a lot of power in my time. And if I'm honest and say I'm willing to believe in something greater than myself, that's a big deal to me. That's pretty important. Because don't you know who I am and how important I am? because that's how I live my life. So I saw that growth could start from that point. Upon a foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend. Would I have it? Of course I would. So remember, Bill was a determined man. And thank God for that, because he was the mainspring in creating this program. And this was the beginning. Would I have it? Of course I would. Thus I was convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough. At long last I saw, I felt, I believed. Scales of pride and prejudice fell from my eyes. I underline pride and prejudice fell from my eyes. I carry that around for so long. So long. I still suffer from judgment today, pride every day. But I have been able to set aside my prejudice against all religions, all beliefs in the power of God. And what happened to me, the same thing that's happened to Bill, a new world came into view. Because now this paradigm shift happens and I get to perceive people and things differently. I get to understand that there's this underlying goodness. And life is a series of choices. And I've been given this choice to recover. And what am I going to do about it? The real significance of my experience in the cathedral burst upon me. For a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. There had been a humble willingness to have him with me, and he came. But soon the sense of his presence had been blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly those within myself. The noise that goes on, right? And so it had been ever since, how blind I had been. So we get to this point. Yes, I'm willing to believe. Yes, I want this power. 2 days go by, worldly clamors take over. Why am I right back where I was? Well, I will tell you, when we talked about the top of page 11 paragraph, am I taking what's convenient out of this program? The most inconvenient thing for each and every one of us in the beginning is to truly surrender to this power that this book calls God. And with each and every day that moves forward, the less action that I take, I become disengaged. I become blind again. That's why this journey takes a lifetime. That's why we suggest reading pages 84 through 88 every day. Let's get in the good word. Let's ask God for some direction and for some help, no matter where we are in the word. Let's take 5 minutes to get quiet and meditate in the morning. Let's get on our knees and pray. Getting on your knees to pray changes the posture of your heart. Okay? Again, I want to be very adamant. Forget about religion. Getting on your knees to pray to this willingness. How willing are you to believe? The God is personal to you. Remember that. And if you're willing to believe that this power is so much greater than you, why is it so difficult to humble ourselves and to get on our knees to talk to this power? Something for you to contemplate and consider. Why does it seem so awkward? It's the ultimate form of humility. That's why. And we don't know how to be humble. I promise you, if you bring that power into your home, your life will change. Even if you're already a believer, even if you already have a relationship with God, changing the posture of your heart by getting on your knees and truly surrendering each and every night or each and every morning has been the most powerful thing in my life. I used to be self-conscious because my wife was going to walk in. Not anymore. At the hospital, I was separated from alcohol for the last time. So, after this conversation with Abby, Bill went and drank again. So this didn't fix him up. Planted a seed. He ends up back in rehab. When we're talking in the doctor's opinion, when Dr. Silkworth says a man came in for the third time, this is the third time. Bill comes back to the hospital. This is where Bill recovers. This is where Bill asks Ebby to come back and instill these virtues, these principles, this course of action, whatever you're doing, help me. Just please come and help me. And it was the last time that Bill had a drink. Treatment seemed wise, for I showed signs of delirium tremens. So that's how bad it was. He was suffering from DTs. He was going to die. Remember, his wife, the doctor told his wife, this guy, he's done. He's going to be brain dead. And where did Bill end up? At home, drinking gin. God sent Ebby to knock on his door. And then a short time after Ebby left, Bill ended up back in the hospital having delirium tremens. Started contemplating the seed that Ebby had planted and chose to make the call to ask him to come back. So there I humbly offered myself to God, as I then understood it, do me as he would. I placed myself unreservedly under his care and direction. He had Ebby come back. He turned his will and his life over to the care of God in that hospital. We write step three, but mind you, there were no steps at this time. This was a man from the Oxford group who was religious, who had recovered, going to help another man open his eyes to the power of God. Now remember, Bill had already learned about his physical craving and everything else that was going on with him. Now he begins to take this, these religious virtues, and combine them. When Bill gets out of this hospital, 6 months later, gets with Dr. Bob, Alcoholics Anonymous is born. Dr. Bob was the opposite. Super spiritual, couldn't stop drinking. Bill went to him with Silkworth's information. He combined that. The two of them together created Alcoholics Anonymous. What a blessing. I admitted for the first time that of myself I was nothing, that without him I was lost. So we write steps four and five, kind of what Bill was doing there. Saying, look, I can't do this without you, God. I'm sure there was some sort of moral inventory that was involved. I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to let my newfound friend, God, take them away root and branch. I have not had a drink since. In that hospital, his step six and seven, Bill says root and branch. Now, when we get to step six and seven, we'll have a deep discussion about all that. The biggest virtue there is willingness and awareness of what's objectionable. The rest is up to God. It's very important to understand that. If I go into this process thinking that, well, Bill said root branch, and why aren't my defects gone? We may be in some trouble. We're here to acknowledge them. We're here to lift them up to this power that we believe in. And if I'm honest with all of you, which I'm doing my utmost to be, I have to do that every single day. There are certain defects in my life, and I'll share them with you as we move forward, that come up every day. Every day. Just because I don't act on them does not mean that they aren't trying to surface. And I don't get mad at God because they're not gone root and branch. But I am willing to have them gone root and branch. My schoolmate visited me, and I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. Step eight. We made a list of people I had hurt and toward whom I felt resentment. I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals, admitting my wrong. Never was I to be critical of them. I was to right all such matters to the utmost of my ability. Step 9. So making restitution was one of the 6 precepts. So Bill had to go out and to make the amends to these people that he had harmed. I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Step 10. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. Everything I think I know is set aside. Every way that I act in life is different. My attitude, my emotion, my ideas have been suddenly replaced by a whole new set of conceptions and motives. And we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks. I've had this spiritual experience going through this course of action. Common sense in my life now becomes uncommon sense. There is no way that I would be of service, make amends to people, apologize immediately, admit when I'm wrong. Very uncommon to me. And it becomes a way of life. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. Step 11. So important. Even if you're just scratching the surface of this new relationship with God, close your eyes, get quiet, let your mind race, acknowledge the presence. That's all we're doing. We're just acknowledging the presence. There's something there. If we get into a place where we're such in doubt, look in the mirror. Go look in the mirror. Ask yourself the question, am I a real alcoholic or drug addict? Have I really lost the power of choice? Could I control this? Then how is it today that I am sober? How is it possible that I sit here sober? The grace of God. That's how. That's how. So when we have trouble sitting quietly with God, get up, go to the mirror, be gentle with yourself. Say, I love you, Kenny. I love you, David. I love you, Tim. All of you, look in the mirror, say it. Go sit back down and get quiet. Get quiet. And ask yourself the question, how am I sober? Come on, man. Really? Did I do this? Because I promise you, if you think you have some power, it will come back to burn you. And you'll do it again. That's what I did. Multiple times. Never was I to pray for myself, except as my request bore on my usefulness to others. Then only might I expect to receive, but that would be in great measure. Now, see, recognize how we are talking so much about other things than the physical craving tonight. We're going through this book. There's a reason why this is here. This is a reminder. The man that you heard me describe last week has recovered. The man that you heard me describe last week prays for other people. The man that you heard me describe last week sits quietly with God every morning. And it's not to boast about it. I'll boast about my weakness. When I boast about my weakness, I mean, without that, I'm getting loaded. That's it. And I'm also acknowledging the change that has occurred. It's what we're striving for. That's what's been attractive to me the whole time I've been here. That's why I'm still here. Praying for other people is very, very powerful. It's very, very easy. All you have to do is go to a meeting once or twice a week and listen. And when you get home, pray for that person. Lift them up to this power. You will receive in great measure, I promise you. My friend promised when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my creator. So Abby told Bill, when you do this work, man, you're going to have a new relationship with this God that you were so prejudiced about. That I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. All our problems. Doesn't mean life's going to be easy. But it does mean that I can create this level of reliance in my life, this recognition that I do not have the power to control or change circumstances. And then I'm going to go to God. I'm going to learn to accept, which is difficult a lot of the times. And not just my problem with alcohol and drugs or sex or food or codependency or whatever we feel our real problem is. They're only but symptoms. But everything else, families can be restored. Careers can be changed and restored. Financial stability can be created. We do not put a limit on the power of God. So now we're going to talk about a few requirements. This is something to really contemplate. Belief in the power of God plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain a new order of things were the essential requirements. So now we're in this place tonight where we're walking towards establishing a new order of things. So in order to establish a new order of things, we need to believe in the power of God. We need to be willing. We need to be humble. Excuse me. And we need to be honest. But more than just establish, as we continue to take this walk, if we want to maintain this new order of things, we have to continue to believe in the power of God, continue to be willing, continue to be honest, and continue to be humble. So this program is simple, but it's not easy. A price has to be paid. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. I must turn in all things to the Father of light who presides over us all. What does that look like for you? Destruction of self-centeredness is the essence of recovery. It's the essence of building a relationship with God. It's the essence of getting out of the way and turning to this power that you've never relied on. I underlined all of that. Honesty, humility, to establish and maintain new order things. I haven't been willing to do that. Destruction of self-centeredness, no way. You're crazy. That would be weak. Turn in all things to the Father of life. That means surrender. I don't even know what that means. And a lot of us have to get to this place of becoming surrendered, this level of desperation that occurs that may have brought some of us here to this workshop. We found ourselves in this place of, man, I got to do something. I got to do something. Something's got to change. Well, what's got to change is the price has to be paid. And that price is destruction of self-centeredness. So now I'm no longer the center of attention or the earth, and everything does not revolve around me. And my life depends on my constant thought of others and how I'm going to meet their needs. How crazy is that? That's what I mean by there's no way I would do that on my own power. That's what I mean by it's a must. I rely on this power bigger than myself in order for me to accomplish that. Because you're telling me here that it's going to be painful. It's not going to be easy. I got to destroy myself and I got to turn in all things to the Father of light. Wow. These are things we contemplate. This is stuff we reread. These are things we revisit. These are measuring sticks. Open the book to page 14 and ask yourself, where am I at with that? What's really going on in my life? These were revolutionary and drastic proposals, but the moment I fully accepted them, the effect was electric. There was a sense of victory followed by such a peace and serenity I had never known. There was utter confidence. I felt lifted up as though the great clean wind of a mountaintop blew through and through. God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on me was sudden and profound. So that gets people wadded up sometimes, okay? Don't let that happen to you. Because on the next page, I'm going to give you a real quick reminder about where Bill ended up a short few months afterwards. Though his experience was sudden and profound, we're going to revisit, we're going to look at the spiritual experience in a few weeks. That's going to remind us that this can be a slow educational process. There's nothing wrong with that. It's been my experience. The only thing sudden and profound in my life is when I took a drink or took a hit. That's it. And that's why I've gone back to that so many times. Because I want instant gratification. I want to feel better right away. Now I'm working a program that's simple, but it surely isn't easy. And I have to pay a price. For a moment, I was alarmed and I called my friend, the doctor, to ask if I were still sane. He listened and wondered as I talked. So this is where Bill, where Dr. Silkworth was talking about Bill coming back to him, right? Back into the hospital saying, hey, look at me, dude. Am I crazy? I've had this certain sudden profound experience. I've got religion. I've got God. I'm sober. And by the way, Emmy told me that if I don't help people, I'm going to be in trouble. So can I help somebody here? So finally, the doctor shook his head and said, something has happened to you. I don't understand, but you'd better hang on to it. Remember that moral psychology, that psychic change that Dr. Silkworth said was a requirement that he could not give these alcoholics. That's what Bill experienced. He had to go through the process. Remember, he turned himself over to God. He turned his will and his life over. He admitted his faults. He put them on paper. He made his amends. He was willing to have God remove his objectionable things in life, root and branch. Uncommon sense. Common sense became uncommon sense. He started to sit quietly with God every day. He started praying for other people. So see, it didn't just happen. Those are the things that God didn't do for Bill. He gave them the ability and the willingness and the courage, but Bill had to take the action to do it. Anything is better than the way you were. The good doctor now sees many men who have such experiences. He knows that they are real. While I lay in the hospital, the thought came that there were thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad to have what I had been so freely given to me. Perhaps I could help some of them. They in turn might work with others. My friend emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all of my affairs. So underline that, because I've definitely not been willing to do that, even in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm willing to go to meetings, work my steps, go through inventory, make amends, take other people through the steps, but then come to my home. Why am I yelling at my wife? Why am I in anger? Why am I frustrated? Why am I living in doubt and worry and fear? Maybe I wasn't doing all the steps. These are questions I ask myself as I go through each day. The measuring stick. Am I really demonstrating these principles in all of my affairs? So Abby reminded Bill, look, you're going to have to do this in life, man. Continue. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, He could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again, and if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. So Ebby told him there will be certain trials and low spots, not possible trials and low spots. And that if you don't get out and carry this message to another alcoholic who's suffering, you will drink again. And the question for you guys to ask yourself, we transcribed right, do I believe if I did not do this with others, I would surely drink again? So that's a very serious question, something to ask yourself. Yes, you may be in a spot where you're like, you know what, I'm not ready for that. Okay, fine, that's fine. But by the time we get through this work, that's what we do. God will qualify you. He will not wait until you feel you're qualified to call upon you. He does not call the qualified. He qualifies the called. If you are called, walk. Trust. God will qualify you. It is a requirement. There are 12 steps, not 11. And part of the 12th step is working with another alcoholic and practicing these principles in all your affairs. Measuring stick. Where are you at? How am I really doing? My wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. It was fortunate, for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. Okay, so Bill's had this experience, remember he said sudden and profound, right? Very short time after, he's enthusiastic with working with other alcoholics, his business has fallen apart, he doesn't have any work. I was not too well at the time, and I was plagued with waves of self-pity and resentment. It's something to really pay attention to. We get wrapped up in, well, Bill had a sudden and profound experience. But what about the next page where Bill says, I'm suffering. I'm plagued. He says plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. He just went through inventory and looked at his resentments. It's all coming back. So note the fact that though he says he had a sudden and profound experience, he's still a flawed human being. His ego's coming back. He wants to drink again. He's miserable. And it's within a very short period of time. And the only saving grace for him is working with another alcoholic. So it takes the heat off a little bit when we talk about this spiritual experience. Don't look for it. Don't plan for it. Surely don't dictate what it's supposed to look like. Don't have any expectations. Destroy self-centeredness. Surrender to the fact that there's a power greater than yourself. Seek it out and do the work. Part of the work is taking somebody else to the work. Time ever comes up in any one of your lives and somebody asks you, you don't feel qualified, you call me. We're going to have a talk. And then you're going to work with them. I promise you. I still feel not qualified to be doing this. You guys don't know. It goes through my mind before I sit down on this computer with you. I don't know if it's landing. I don't know if it's worth anything. Just trusting that I don't have the power. And if I don't do this, the chances of me getting loaded are pretty high. So he's plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink. But I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Many times I have gone to my old hospital in despair. On talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set up on my feet. It is designed for living that works in rough going. So that's what works when we're suffering. Go help somebody, especially when you feel you're not qualified. We commenced to make many fast friends and a fellowship has grown up among us, which it is a wonderful thing to feel a part of. So this is the first promise that we're going to read in this book. And I wouldn't necessarily, some people call it the first step promise. I think it's just the promise of the program. Because remember, Bill just got through telling us his whole journey in recovery. Talked a lot more about all of the steps and healing than just the first step. The joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty. Now, I struggle with that, but I have been able to experience that. There is a sense of joy doing this workshop, coming here to sit with you guys tonight. I've been a contractor for 26 years. I have 4 employees. They haven't worked in 2 weeks. I don't know where the next job's coming from. And there has been a sense of joy in my life through it. Difficult, but I'm recognizing it. Even under pressure and difficulty, definitely under pressure. It's just my experience with this. I've seen hundreds of families set on their feet in the path that really goes somewhere. Last week, I told you guys about my family. I told you guys about my history. My family has been set on its feet. My marriage has been restored from the madness that I told you, that I shared with you. Yes, there is healing to be done. Yes, I don't get to dictate how that happens. Yes, I would love it to be all gone and never brought up. It's not the case. But this family, my 2 children who are adults, my wife and myself and my mother and my brother, my relationships with them have been restored and we have been set on our feet. I've seen the most impossible domestic situations righted. That's me. That's me. I'm sure many of you are like, how can that woman still be there? No way. I wouldn't do. There's a lot of women here that listened last week that would say, there's no way I would go through that. There's no way I would take that abuse. She didn't. God did. She didn't. God did. Alcoholics Anonymous saved us. We spent 6 years trying to do it on our own with counseling. And drugs and alcohol and screaming and yelling and moving in and moving out. This program did it. Impossible domestic situations righted. You can experience that. Feuds of bitterness of all sorts wiped out. I have seen men come out of asylums and resume a vital place in their lives for their families and communities. And that's me. Although I was never incarcerated or in a rehabilitation home or treatment center, I lived in an asylum. I lived in insanity. I lived in this world of my own private hell. And I've come out of that asylum and I've resumed a vital place in the life of my family. My family looks up to me. My son is in recovery now. He said that the main reason he started recovery is because he believes that it works because he's been watching me. You know how that was the greatest thing I've ever heard. It's beautiful. He's 29 years old, a real alcoholic, with 3 kids and a wife. Doing a fifth step through the BBA this weekend with the man. Like, what a blessing. What a blessing. Vital place in my family's life. Vital place. You can too. Businesses and professional men have regained their standing. When I walked into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous in 2018, I had been in business for about 19 years. I shared with you guys my drug dealing and the things that were going on with me. And I remember sitting on the tailgate with my 1 employee, telling them I didn't know how I was going to pay them. I remember borrowing $30,000 twice that year that I didn't know how I was going to pay back. Since then, I've gained financial stability, 4 employees, steady work. Yes, I'm staring at nothing right now, but that's just, maybe it's because I'm supposed to be here with you guys. I don't know. It's just, it is what it is. I accept it today. But my business and myself as a professional man have regained my standing. There is scarcely any form of trouble and misery which has not been overcome among us. So those are the promises of this program. In one Western city and its environs, there are 1,000 of us and our families. We meet frequently so that newcomers may find the fellowship they seek. At these informal gatherings, one may often see from 50 to 200 persons. We are growing in numbers and power. An alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. Our struggles with them are variously strenuous, comic, and tragic. With them are variously, or excuse me, one poor chap committed suicide in my home. He could not or would not see our way of life. Remember the supreme sacrifice we talked about, right? Doctor's opinion. Some of these men, they're just, and women, they're not willing. They can't get this. They're suffering. They're struggling. They make the supreme sacrifice. Bill Wilson experienced that in his home. It's crazy, right? They were having meetings in his house. Somebody killed himself in his house. That's how serious this is. And I want you guys to ask yourself the question, like, is this life or death for me? Is it? Because if it's not, then maybe we're wasting time. It's an honest question. Is this life or death? How important is it? How important is it to me to show up? How important is it? How bad do I want to recover? How much am I really hurting? And then all back to that one question, do I think I still have some power? Because if you do, then go use the power. But I will warn you that if you are the real deal, nothing good will come of it. Nothing. It's only a matter of time. So I do want you all to know that I appreciate those who show up. I appreciate you that are very serious about what we're doing here. It's very important to me. It's very heavy on my heart, and it's a very serious life or death situation. It really is. No matter how much sobriety you have, the power of God can touch you in ways that you could not imagine. And I want to experience it myself. I'm not some spiritual guru. I'm just another alcoholic addict who's suffering, struggling, just like you, who's here because I want more. I want more. And I want to be able to help people. I want to be able to make a difference. I think making a difference in somebody else's life is the greatest gift that anybody can ever experience. That's what we're here for. That's what God wants. There is, however, a vast amount of fun about it all. I suppose some would be shocked at our seeming worldliness and levity, but just underneath there is deadly earnestness. Faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, or we perish. Most of us feel we need look no further for utopia. We have it with us right here and now. Each day, my friend's simple talk in our kitchen multiplies itself in a widening circle of peace on earth and goodwill to men. So that's Bill's story. And our assignment for next week is going to be assignment number 5. It's going to be the first half of There Is a Solution. Yes, we will be continuing to talk about the physical craving. But There Is a Solution is the meat and potatoes of the program. And it's exactly what the chapter is entitled. There Is a Solution. And it's going to tell us about it. Now we end, supposed to end the meeting with meditation. So What I opted to do is just give you guys something inspirational. If you're uncomfortable or you want to leave, that's fine. Quite a few people have already popped off the meeting. So I'm going to play this and just listen to the words. And remember, last week was tough. If we dug deep and we really got honest, it's painful and it's uncomfortable. And if you're uncomfortable, then you're in the right place. If we're doing all the way up until we get to our fifth step, if you're uncomfortable, you're in the right place. That means you're doing something right. So just remember, this is simple but not easy, and a price really has to be paid. Destruction of self-centeredness. So I'll play this for you guys, and then we'll get out of here.
Trading punches with the heart of darkness, throwing the blows with your fear incarnate. You're never going to strip away. The part of you has got to die to change. In the morning you're going to need an answer. Ain't nobody going to change the standard. It's not enough to just feel the flame. You got to find your old self away. Hold on tight a little longer. Work don't kill you, make you stronger. Get back up, cause it's a faller. You can't change without a fallout. It's gonna hurt, but don't you slow down. Get back up, cause it's a faller. You know the situation can't be right, and all you ever do is fight. But there's a reason that the road is long. It takes some time to make your courage strong. Hold on tight a little longer. What don't kill you make you stronger. Get back up, cause it's a faller. You can't change without a fallout. It's gonna hurt, but don't you slow down. Get back up, cause it's a faller.
When the wolves come and hunt me down, I will face them all and stand my ground. Cause there's a fire burning deep, and they will see my strength in this love I've found.
So I see, Delia, you're here, and Mercedes, did she leave? Delia, if you could text me your, let me stop the recording. Hold on.